Jim and I are shocked that Brian has more than two favorite Mad Men, actually. So our feelings are hurt right now. As you've heard us speak before, we've talked before about mega gaming as really building on emergent gameplay. And to continue with that theme, this is an emergent presentation because neither of us have really decided what we're going to say, and we're going to make it up as we go along. And I thought as part of our commitment to greater methodological rigor, I'd sit down and think, what are the strengths and weaknesses of mega gaming as a technique? And so here I made a list of the strengths and weaknesses of mega gaming as a technique. As you will know from Tuesday, you have a lot of people in the room, and a lot of people in the room can be very problematic, particularly a lot of people moving around tables, not sort of in a very structured situation, could be deeply problematic. They get up to all kinds of stuff, including stuff you hadn't anticipated in the game design. It's noisy, it's chaotic, they get in the way, you can't see them. And that could be a problem. I think that what you're trying to do in mega gaming is make that part of the game model so that if, as I said here, mega gaming has a lot of fog, it has a lot of friction in it, it's not clear what people are doing, there's rumors going around, people are spreading rumors. If you were doing a game, one hopes, of Dutch flood control, that presumably is not the right kind of atmosphere. The water's going up, the water's going down, it hasn't rained, yes it has rained, I'm gonna rain on you. But if you're doing a game of international crisis in which there's both internal politics within states and politics between states, that sort of chaos, in fact, can happen in moments of crisis. Indeed, virtually all the research on crisis highlights how poor information processing is under extreme time pressures when there are serious values under threat. So you wouldn't want to use a mega game for everything, and there are times when those aspects of a mega game would be deeply problematic. But there are other times when, in fact, they're not a bug, they're a feature of the game system. Another problem is that a lot of your gaming models, I mean, it's free Kriegsspiel even freer because not only are umpires adjudicating, we have a set of rules, we have very few rules, and as you saw on Tuesday, and Jim will talk about that, but not only are we adjudicating outcomes, we don't even know what outcomes we're adjudicating in advance in many cases until they came up, because all those people in the room come up with ideas we hadn't thought of and we had designed rules around. That could be problematic in certain experimental contexts, frankly, but it's really not if you're using the mega game for the kind of situation where unusual and unexpected things occur and have to be responded to. And the emergent gameplay allows the game to go in interesting directions. It doesn't constrain it to the designer's vision. And frankly, if you'd ask Jim or I what would happen in the game, our range of plausible outcomes or games that we thought the game could support went everywhere from full-scale thermonuclear war to no one shooting at each other.
In fact, people say to me very often after games, did it go the way you thought it would go? Which, of course, the answer is, I never think it's going to go anyway because emergent gameplay.
So that could be quite useful. At the same time, you do want to design the game so that preferably it stays within the universe that the players want to stay in. Now, if you're running Watch the Skies or a zombie apocalypse, that may be a very large universe. Here we wanted it to fall within the range of plausible geopolitical outcomes, and I think we did that. So Jim's going to say some things about the game design for Dire Straits, and there's the red balloon. That's for you, Brian. There's your red balloons going up. And in a moment, watch the corner there. Clapping North Koreans, here comes. There we have a submarine-launched ballistic missile, and there's a typical North Korean nuclear test. Watch the ballistic missile. There we go. Okay. So on that note, Jim, you want to take it away.
Okay. So we were given an exam question, connections. The wizards that run connections communicated with us and said, thou shalt do some things. We want to make a game again, despite having done War in Binny. This seemed to be a good idea to do for a second year. These are the things we want it to include. Sometimes that's explicit. Sometimes someone will come to me and say, I specifically want one thing. That's lovely. In this instance, we had a number of things that we had to take into account in order to construct the game. So this is the game design part, really, of 120 people, 6 hours. Everyone must be engaged and involved.
it would be simple to do a game for 120 people where three people took decisions and 117 people watched them do it, but that wouldn't have met the brief. A requirement to raise the bar and to include an analytical layer, and this was a new thing, those of you that were here on Tuesday, we talked a little bit about the novelty of that, and that part will continue. The subject must be real world and current interest. We don't have a lot of space. In an ideal world, one constructs one's game and then finds a space that accommodates all the grandiose plans for your game, with all the sub-elements and the separate rooms and people going between different places. But it's a major design consideration when you only have three rooms of a specific size and there is no flexibility, and that does impact on the game design. The participants are mixed. Some of you that took part were war game virgins, and we had to take that into account as well. Some were grognards, and there would be no time for pre-reading. So these are a set of really strict constraints. Nobody in their right mind would design any kind of serious game with this set of constraints. Fortunately, so we looked at... Originally, it was Dire Straits came from Taiwanese Straits.
Well, China. Let's face it, we thought the name was cool.
Yeah, okay.
And everything flows from that. But
okay.
Anyway.
So, okay, design...
the official version of the design.
Yeah, official version. So the design reveal is that games are designed not based on anything other than finding a cool name first and then fitting the game around it. We found the cool game about the same time as we... but we did start off looking at Taiwan and China. It became clear, whilst it's perfectly possible to do a really credible game on that, that the other criteria, which we just listed, 120 people, engagement for 6 hours and so on, there wasn't enough, at least at our first cut, in that. And so we looked at additional actors, additional layers, because we were meeting these other requirements. So the game design is not just about we have to construct a credible simulation or a credible narrative around the crisis flashpoints in East Asia region. We had to do that in the context of the other design considerations. And so that built up. So as we looked at the extent of the actors that were going to be involved, we also looked at, it then became clear there was an opportunity to do some exploration of the USA internal policy making decisions, and also as a consequence looking at some Korean internal narrative, so that it wasn't just problem solving, it wasn't just a caricature. And maybe Rex, you can say something about that.
A couple comments on that. The reason we didn't have a Donald Trump, that Donald Trump was a board game, it was a very fun board game, I think, but the reason that he was a board game was a concern that that was a role in which, if played poorly, if we got a completely clownish Donald Trump or a completely hyper-rational Clausewitzian Donald Trump, the entire game could go off in odd directions. So partly that was reducing our vulnerability, but partly if it had been played by a player, we really couldn't quite have got the White House intrigue of policy advisors and people in the national security community all jostling to get the president's ear, to brief him last, to tilt him in particular policy directions. It would be very difficult for a person to model Donald Trump's behavior, one way of putting it. It was easier to do with the game of snakes and ladders. It was easier, leaving aside the game model. The game model, and I, as a political scientist, would argue that the outputs were quite realistic, provided an opportunity for people to bring to bear their bureaucratic and other resources, their political capital, their different sets of interests within the White House to affect outcomes. And for, I made this point yesterday, but for those of you who didn't hear it, or the day before, even though it may have seemed completely irrational, it was completely rational if you were in the room and you understood the interests of those who were trying to move Donald Trump in particular directions. It was not a random card draw. It was people purposely playing scarce political capital to move their favorite policy idea along the policy track in order for it to become output. And if it seemed irrational, it's because you haven't been thinking about it at a two-level game, in which if you're a domestic political advisor worried about the Republican challenger in the 2020 elections, Korea may actually be not your top priority when you go in to talk to the president. With regard to North Korea, we fiddled around with game designs for a bit, and in the end, we just stuck a bunch of pieces in front of the North Korean team with some really vague rules and some interesting cards and instructions to Tom to wing it. because we didn't want to predetermine whether there'd be a North Korean leadership split. We wanted to leave it a bit of a mystery. The game rules would have in fact, when the assassination attempt, that was the only scripted event, anything, was the assassination attempt against Brian. We didn't know whether it'd be successful because we knew another player had a card to save him, but we just didn't know if they would save him or not. So we deliberately left it kind of opaque and uncertain. They could have a cooperative leadership, they could have splits, they could have somewhere in between the two. The other advantage of putting all that game stuff on the North Korean table is anyone who walked past the North Korean table thought, oh my goodness, there's complex North Korean politics I can't possibly understand from the outside, but I see a lot of colored pawns. So it was partly a visual representation of North Korean politics. In that sense, it was a bit of a sort of staging whiz that that we had done there.
So, on the less I guess that's kind of an art piece.
Yeah,
the artist piece.
Performance art.
Yes. More architecturally, there are other things which fell out in terms of the game design, and so we were looking at. I think it's most of this is self-evident. So it's clear simplified maps. So you saw, those of you who hadn't seen the map, if you flick back actually. So a clear area-based map, no detail to speak of, a few cities marked on really to make it slightly less dull. But it couldn't be simpler because players need to be able to cognitively pick up intuitively. So if we can go forward again. Very stylized military options, very limited numbers of cards, very simplified game counters representing military assets, representing capabilities, and deliberately no detail. Because one of the design considerations of the game was that we wanted a lot of iterations in order for people to see consequences. So we'd chosen to have 30-minute game turns over 6 hours. Well, we managed about 10 game turns. There isn't time to do complex calculations, and actually the purpose of the game, as we saw it, was to give a grounding for policy decisions without getting drawn into detail, so that one can make some informed decisions without being dragged down into time-consuming detail considerations. The rules were very light, the combat resolution system was basically one side of A4 blown up to one side of A3, very simple options and criteria for players, and the team briefings, everything had to be short because people were going to read it on the day and hopefully absorb it. And we had an external experience. You might say something about the media team.
Yeah, one of the challenges, and Jim and I both run into this when we've run large games, is the media team is absolutely critical. I've had games go poorly because the media team is not very professional. They're reporting rumors as fact. People get confused, etc. And I've had games go extremely well because the media team in these kinds of games is a semi-control function. So they're being the media, but they have a responsibility to the game and the game quality. And there are times, frankly, when you talk to them and suggest they report a story or you give them information in order to make sure the narrative moves along. And that is very hard to do with randomly assigned players who've shown up on the day. So we had a sophisticated recruitment strategy for the external media team. Jim emailed a friend and I posted something on Facebook. We got a bunch of volunteers, all of whom have been in either my games at McGill or in Jim's Mega Games here. And I think you could see the difference that made in terms of reporting. There were very few reports. There was only one report we had to correct during the whole time, and that's because someone gave them inaccurate information. Very, very timely, to the point that it overloaded Twitter, and the Twitter robot called my mobile phone to check that we were real people and not hackers because of the amount of the frequency with which tweets were going out. So it briefly locked for a moment there. But that makes a real difference. So there are even in these very large games in which you've got lots of moving parts, there are sometimes very small roles or individuals that could wreck it or can make it, and having an experienced media team makes all the difference. Okay, we have Brian is making up his own emergent gameplay here, where it's some kind of countdown clock, but I don't know if you collect three of the same set, if you get to sit down or something.
Can we trade them?
I don't know. I want a blue one. I hear those are really good. I don't know if we have anything else to say. That's
Obviously, now we're going to go into a long narrative about all the events. Basically, I think the one thing you had to ask was there was no war.
There was no war. We weren't expecting war. And frankly, we spent more time modeling the kind of UK-Iceland Cod War type situation where ships are engaged in aggressive maneuvering and something could accidentally happen We could have handled a bigger war. There was stuff that happened. As many of you know, South Korea did preparatory work on a crash nuclear program. The U.S. and Vietnam set up SIGINT monitoring stations along the Chinese border and things. So there were stuff that happened, but it all fell within the, we don't want to get to full confrontation. We're just trying to hedge our bets or protect ourselves. And I was quite happy with that outcome. I thought you guys all actually played really, really well, and I was very happy with what you did.
Excellent.
Here we go. Can we get one more?